Hi, and welcome to our latest episode of Understanding Your Superannuation. Today, we have a really hot topic at the moment around super, but it's a bit different to the tax topics we've been talking about. It's around death benefits and binding nominations. I'm very excited to have as a guest today, Daniel Mannion. Daniel is a solicitor with Stuart Latham Solicitors on the Northern Beaches in Sydney. We've used the firm for many, many clients to look after their estate planning needs. So really great to have Daniel on the call today. She's going to go through what death benefit nominations are, the different type of nominations, how important it is, some of the implications, talk about estate planning. And she also talks about collaborative estate planning, which is a relatively new concept, a little bit like with family law, where you start to talk about these things before death in terms of the collaborative estate planning, so that to avoid conflict perhaps afterwards. So tune in, listen in, really important topic. And again, big thanks to Danielle. We'll have her contact details in the notes. Hi, Danielle, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Great to have you on the podcast today. Really appreciate your time. Today, for all our listeners, we're talking about superannuation and particularly in estate planning and death benefits. So, yeah, Daniel, if you just want to start with tell me a bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, I'm a solicitor. I practice at Stuart Latham Solicitors in Avalon. I've been there for a couple of years, and I specialise in sort of wills and estates, but mostly in estate planning, and work together with Stuart, who also does sort of business and property and estate planning as well.
Yeah, terrific. Well, for us in super, estate planning and death benefits is a really really hot topic, I suppose, particularly last week with more super tax changes being announced. So a lot of the time we find that people don't quite understand the connection between super and a will. So are you able to give me sort of a bit of a summary of how they sort of work together and a few things that you're seeing at the moment, perhaps amongst your clients?
Sure. Yeah. Well, normally when clients are coming in, I'm explaining to them that super is not automatically part of their estate, and most people are surprised by that. They think by doing a will that they've dealt with their superannuation, and it sort of takes a bit of sort of client education to sort of bring them up to speed that they sort of have to, if they want it to be part of their estate and distributed according to their will, they need to make that happen. And the way to do that is via a binding death benefit nomination, but that's not always necessarily the right way to deal with it. And and also, you don't necessarily always want it to be part of your estate. You know, there can be tax benefits to keeping the money in super for your spouse. And so it's really sort of a broad consideration of what they want to do, what the overall plan is, you know, working with the financial advisor as well as to what sort of the best situation for their circumstances.
Yeah, terrific. I mean, that's it is a very common sort of reaction that people don't quite understand, and particularly, I suppose, if people have had a super fund for some years and they're not really even aware that they can even make a nomination. So I suppose we find that as an initial step. In terms of the nominations that people can make, you talked about a binding death benefit nomination. Do you ever just explain just again what exactly that means? And
yeah, sure. There's about four different nominations that people can do. There's binding, non-binding, lapsing and non-lapsing. The most common kind of nomination, if people do a nomination at all, is a non-binding nomination. And normally this is something where you might log on to your super fund and tick a form and say who you want your super to go to. Those sort of nominations, they potentially carry some influence on the trustee, but they're effectively pretty useless in terms of controlling your superannuation. It really needs to be a binding nomination if you want to have certainty around where your super goes. And then, so once, if you want to do a binding nomination, and a binding nomination normally means that you're binding the trustee as to how you want your superannuation to be dealt with, whether you want it to go to your estate or to your spouse, and there's certain requirements for that binding nomination.
Yeah, no, terrific, yeah. And you mentioned before that some people don't make a nomination, and so, yeah, what sort of situation perhaps would someone be, maybe think, oh, I won't leave a nomination on the super fund, what happens then?
Sometimes it's like if they're a young couple, it may not necessarily be needed for them, and they've got a self-managed super fund and the other spouse is going to be in control of it at the time of their death, because it can be sort of tax considerations as to whether it is best to go to the spouse or not to go to the spouse. Also, if you're know the person that's going to be in control of your superannuation, you might be happy to leave it to them to make a decision. We're always guiding clients really to make that decision, because the level of uncertainty can create in actually who gets your benefits, you know, can cause estate disputes, superannuation complaints, and it's just always better, I think, to have that certainty around what's happening. And even if, you know, even with spouses over the age of 60, where you know the other spouse is going to be in control of the super at the time of your death and it's a self-managed superannuation fund, I still like to see those binding nominations in place. Just to get over the issue that sometimes if your spouse is also the executor of your estate, they can be conflicted in paying that superannuation to themselves. So we like to make it that it's binding, or, you know, otherwise, you know, it can be, unless there's something in the will that says the executor, because the executor has an obligation to maximise the assets of the estate. So they're then acting as executor and then they're going in and claiming the superannuation for themselves. They're potentially in a conflicted situation. So
yeah,
to make it binding.
Yeah, okay, interesting, yeah. And also, I suppose you find people in the self-managed super fund structure, you know, people, obviously, normally two people, sometimes maybe more, but do you find if people don't have a self-managed super fund and perhaps they haven't ever thought about a nomination, there's a bit of risk there because, you know, you're leaving it up to a huge, you know, huge organisation to make that decision for you, in, potentially, yeah?
You are, and if you haven't done a nomination, you know, under the CIS Act, it can go to anyone who's a dependent or your legal personal representative, and it's really up to the trustee to decide who gets that super and in what proportions. You may have wanted it to go to your kids, but the super trustee might decide we want it to go to the spouse, or we don't want it going into the estate, even if there's a direction in your will that how to deal with the superannuation.
Yep.
So yeah, you really need to consider that.
Yeah, I think it's just it's an important part of someone's financial affairs to sort of check all that out for them to understand the issues and the risks, and particularly if they haven't got a nomination, what, you know, I suppose not only could go the wrong person, but the delays it can take as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also the advantage of looking at the reversionary pension nominations. You know, there's that, 12-month leeway for the transfer balance cap if you've got an automatic reversionary pension nomination. So we're sort of taking that into account as well.
Yeah, so for our listeners, are you able to just explain that term? Like what is a reversionary pension nomination?
So the way I explain it to clients is that, you know, when you have your superannuation, you've got the two phases of super. So you've got the accumulation mode and the pension mode. And for the funds that are in the pension mode, you also have the option, in addition to a binding death benefit nomination or instead of, to do a reversionary pension nomination. And that means that on death, the pension automatically goes to the usually to a spouse, it's outside the whole probate process, so it can just be a form-filling exercise to claim that super. And also there's sort of tax advantages in terms of the transfer balance caps. You get more time for that client who's received the superannuation, if they're over the transfer balance cap themselves, to roll money back into accumulation mode and make space to receive that money and receive it, you know, through a relatively simple process.
Yeah. So it sounds like, if, you know, in a husband and wife, typical sort of self-managed super fund, and they'll do a tick a reversionary pension, you get a bit more flexibility, no probate, which is a real plus because probate can take a long time.
Yeah.
And also with we're not talking about transfer balance caps and technically on this show today, but effectively gives you some flexibility in timing, because that can be a tax impact if there was no reversion, we can just kick straight into the excessive amount and you're being taxed at 15%.
Exactly. And also it can save, in a husband and wife situation, it can sometimes save the need for a grant of probate as well if it's a regulated super fund.
Yeah. Very good. Well, anything else in terms of binding nominations or super funds that you think we should chat about?
I just wanted to just touch on the the non-lapsing nominations in the self-managed super funds. So you have the regulation, which in most retail funds is that these binding nominations, you've done all this planning, you've made the binding nomination, but in most retail super funds, it's expiring after 3 years. And so the advantage of the self-managed super funds is that you can do these non-lapsing nominations. There are retail funds where you can do it as well, but generally in self-managed super funds, you can do the non-lapsing nominations. And there's sort of been clarity around that recently because it's always been questioned whether those non-lapsing nominations in self-managed super funds are caught by that requirement of the three-year lapsing. And it seems like it's pretty clear now that they're not. But you do have to be careful and read the trust deed because sometimes the trust deed will incorporate that 3-year binding lapsing provision and those non-binding, what you think you've done a non-binding, that a non-lapsing nomination in a self-managed super fund, you may not have.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So just,
it's good to, Yeah, good point. Well, that's really helpful. I thought just obviously while I've got you on the show, just to talk a little bit about just general estate planning as well. I mean, again, it's an issue that surprisingly a lot of people don't see the urgency around it and perhaps don't understand how bad it is if someone doesn't have a will. So I suppose just a few little tips and traps around, the basics of a will, why it's so important, maybe in your experience, what you've seen when people don't have a will, so that it brings people a little bit to that urgency to say, okay, I understand why this is so important.
Oh, it's really important to have a will. You know, there's some debate about whether even a post office will is better than no will at all. But I think just having something written down as your intentions is the best way of achieving what you want. And there's just obviously, if with a proper estate planning process, there's huge tax benefits to planning effectively through the use of trusts. And also protecting the inheritance that might be going to children, that might be at risk of family law breakdown and bankruptcy and things like that by putting inheritances into a trust. If you don't have a will and it's under intestacy, it's just a really long process to go through all the elements of proving who's entitled to make a claim. Receive the estate, who's entitled to be the person that acts to make that claim. It's really quite distressing at the time when you've just lost someone to find out you've got all this administration, you're running around everywhere trying to get birth certificates and marriage certificates and everything to prove who's entitled. And just for the sake of having, gone through the process of meeting with a solicitor and going through your estate plan, you can just avoid that for your beneficiaries and just make it a really, hopefully, simple process.
Yeah. And you hear people talk about sort of, I suppose, horror stories of potentially the family not even getting the money. It goes to, people say things like it could go to the government or things like that. Is that true?
Well, it's rare that it goes to the government. The intestacy provisions are pretty wide.
Yeah.
But often, I just wouldn't rely on that for your estate planning. Wishes for what you want to do.
Yeah. So the main reason is just really the time and the inconvenience and obviously the stress of it all, because you've just lost someone, particularly at any stage of life. But if it's unplanned and suddenly you realise there's no will and the family has to spend, how long can that take? A year, 2 years?
Yeah, easily. I mean, you've got it. You're aiming to get the application in, within 6 to 12 months, kind of thing. By the time you get everything together, depending on how complicated it is, but yeah, it's just distressing for the people involved, and it's just so much easier if they had a will. And also, it's really sad in the situations where you're bound by what's under intestacy, and you know that they know that the testator wouldn't have wanted that.
Yeah.
Or that result.
We've had quite a few clients over the years, and probably particularly now, some of the younger clients, or not that young, but they're getting to mid-30s, 40s, and they've been asked to be the executor of their parents' estate or something like that. So what have they got to bear in mind if they're suddenly being asked to be an executor?
Well, I always think it's a great honour to be asked to be an executor. But it does come with a lot of obligations as well, particularly if there's complicated tax affairs. You have to be really aware that if you step into the role of executor, you essentially take on the tax liabilities of the deceased and of their estate. And so you have to be really careful that you're getting good advice and you know what's happening. Usually people are nominating people that they trust, and generally it's a position that's seen to be one that's sort of an honorary position. You're not necessarily making a claim for payment for that position. If it's complicated tax affairs, you should probably get advice on whether it's appropriate that you act, and also whether it's depending on what's happening with superannuation, whether you're the right person to be an executor, because you might be wanting to claim the super.
Yeah. Well, Danny, that's been very, very helpful, particularly for people understand that the reason of having a nomination on a super fund and how a super fund works separately from a will, but the importance of having a will in any regards and to getting proper advice around all this, because as a lot of people listening might be their parents or family, might be their own situation, but we do find it very common that people don't have wills at all. So it's a really, really strong recommendation. They come and see you and Stuart, or they might have already a solicitor that they've been using over the years. But it's amazing how common it is that people haven't got a will, or they haven't even looked at it for 20 years.
Yeah.
And there's a real misunderstanding of the super death benefits as well, and particularly how that can be taxed. So
yeah,
I think it's a really topical issue, really important for people to understand. So I appreciate you sharing your knowledge and wisdom today. We'll have your contact details, of course, and the firm details on here if anyone wants to reach out, and we can introduce them your way. We will. But are there any final comments, any key things you wanted to mention that you haven't?
I did want to mention collaborative estate planning.
Yeah.
Collaborative law in terms of resolution of disputes has been around for the last 20 years in family law.
Mm.
And recently, lawyers are being trained up to also do collaborative law process in both estate disputes, but also in estate planning.
Right, okay.
And what that can mean is that from an estate planning process, it's about having an open discussion with your children. Particularly in blended families, or your spouse or anything, and the testators can involve their children in that whole process as well. Mm. And if it's a situation where it's sort of a blended family and there's children and there's a second spouse, and it's likely that there could be issues in the estate, what we're sort of encouraging clients to do is consider the collaborative process, which is where the children as well are legally represented in the discussions. Mm. And it's all about, it's client-led dispute resolution, so it's and planning. It's not about necessarily someone mediating or ruling as to what happens, but it's about a series of meetings where you get together and everyone talks about what their wishes are, what they would like to see happen, and then the testators can take that all into account, because often we have testators that give certain ways, but if they had they'll come back later and say, oh, we spoke to our child about this, and they don't want the house, or they don't want this investment property or something, and we're like, oh, you could start that from the beginning, and everyone could be open, and the idea is about, preserving family relationships after the death of someone, if there is any conflict in the family, and trying to work together collaboratively and involving financial planners in that process as well. So that's sort of a new thing that's happening in estate planning.
Yeah, really interesting, yeah. Actually, hadn't heard much about that in the estate planning. Obviously, we've seen it in family law matters with clients. So, yeah, that's interesting. And we have always sort of tried to suggest to clients to have the discussion, before they die with their family if they can, to try to avoid disputes. But that can be difficult, and a lot of people, they struggle to bring everyone together to a table. So I think having a more formal process would certainly save a lot of angst and pain down the track. Yeah?
I think it's always good to talk to people.
Yeah.
And be open.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's good. So a lot to cover off there today. I think there's always so much. You could talk about this for a lot longer, I know, but from today's point of view, it's giving people a bit of a headline around the nominations, around estate planning, something new there, like that collaboration is really interesting to know about, and just keeping people informed, keeping people access to where to go.
Definitely. Thanks so much, Nigel.
Really thanks so much, Daniel. Appreciate your time, and we'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thank you.
So thanks so much for listening in to today's podcast. Just remember, it is general information. If you need personal advice, please seek an advisor or go to our website, cntm.com.au, log in, and we can direct you if you need more help. Also, we just want to remind you, if you're loving this stuff, please like and subscribe and share it around. We're really enjoying spreading the word around Super and hope you enjoy it. So please do like and look out for the next episode. Cheers.